They were reduced to a tiny band now. Only three women and three men. For once, Nakontu and Imbali had chosen to ride rather than run, and each led a spare horse. "Where are we going?" Fenn asked Merrin as she rode beside him. "As close to the mountains as is safe," Merrin answered. "When Taita comes, we must be able to join him swiftly." He turned to Sedudu, who rode at his other side. "Do you know of a place near to the mountain where we can hide?" She thought for only a moment. "Yes," she replied. "There is a valley where I used to go with my father to collect mushrooms when they came into season. We camped in a cave that few know of." Soon the shining white peaks of the three volcanoes rose above the western horizon. They skirted round the village of Mutangi and looked down on the burnt-out ruins from the low hills where they had hunted the wild hog. Smell of ashes and charred bodies wafted up to them. No one said much as they turned away and went on westwards towards the mountains. The valley to which Sedudu took them was tucked away in the foothills. It was so well concealed by trees and the folds of the land that it was not visible until they were looking down into it. There was good grazing for the horses and a tiny spring that supplied sufficient water for their needs. The cave was dry and warm. Sedudu's family had left a pair of battered old cooking pots and other utensils in a crevice at the back, with a large pile of firewood. The women cooked the evening meal, and they all gathered round the fire to eat. "We will be comfortable enough here," Fenn said. "But how far are we from the citadel and the road that leads up to the Cloud Gardens?"
6 or 7 leagues to the north,"
Sedudu answered.
"Good," said Merrin, through a mouthful of venison stew. "Far enough to be unobtrusive, but close enough to reach Taita swiftly when he comes down."
"I am pleased that you say when, and not if," Fenn observed quietly. There was silence for a while, except for the clinking of spoons in the copper bowls.
"How will we know when he comes?" Sedudu asked. "Will we have to keep watch for him on the road?"
They all looked at Fenn.
"There will be no need for that," Fenn replied. "I will know when he comes. He will warn me."
They had been continually on the move, riding and fighting, for many months. In all that time this was their first chance for a full night's sleep, broken only by their turns on sentry duty. Fenn and Sedudu took the midnight watch, and when the great cross of stars in the south dipped towards the horizon, they stumbled half asleep into the cave to wake Nakontu and Imbali for the dog watch. Then they fell onto their sleeping mats and dropped into oblivion. Before dawn, the next morning, Fenn shook Merrin awake. He started up so violently that he woke the others, and when he saw the tears on Fenn's cheek, he reached for his sword.
"What is it, Fenn? What is amiss?"
"Nothing," Fenn cried. Now he looked properly at her face and realized she was weeping for joy.
"Everything is perfect. Taita is alive. He came to me in the night."
"Did you see him?" Merrin seized her arm and shook her in agitation.
"Where is he now? Where has he gone?"
"He came to overlook me while I was asleep. When I awoke, he showed me his spirit sign and told me, 'I will return to you soon, very soon.'" Sedudu leapt up from her mat and embraced Fenn.
"Oh, I am so happy for you and for the rest of us."
"Now everything will be all right," Fenn said. "Taita is coming back, and we will be safe."